Hey, everybody. Wendy Sellers here, the HR lady. You know what? Welcome to my podcast, first of all. And second of all, JC and I, who's my co-host, we want you to get to know us. We realize we always just jump right into these conversations. We've never really introduced ourselves in order to let you know this is why we're experts here. So that's what this podcast is going to be about. So, hey, JC, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. Wendy, you?
Same. I am going to be going on vacation soon, and I cannot wait. I should have scheduled a vacation way earlier in the year. It was a little too late, and I am burning the midnight oil, and I feel like I'm a little fried.
Where are you going?
I'm going to a bunch of places, but generally, I am going to the last three states that I have to go to. I don't have to go to, I guess, that I choose to go to, and then I will be have been in every state in the United States.
Get so
I'm
out
going
of here.
To Illinois. Yeah, I'm very excited.
Wait, whoa. You've never been to Illinois?
I'm sorry, not Illinois. Geez, see, I told you I'm brain dead.
Okay.
I'm going to Michigan,
okay.
And then I'm going to Indiana, the other eye, and Kentucky. And they're the last three states. The funny thing is, JC, you know, I never planned this. Most of my travel across the country way back when started because of business.
Yeah.
You know, I was an HR director and we started expanding across the country. And of course, the HR director had to go and open offices or go and say hello to companies that we merged or acquired. And then I started doing recruiting, college recruiting, and that allowed me to go all over the United States. And then I don't know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, about I said, whoa, I've got most of the United States covered. And then that's when I went back to Illinois for a conference. I have actually already been there,
yeah.
But I was so close to a few states that I haven't been to. I took a road trip
Nice. And
did like the Dakotas. And then I was like, oh my goodness, I only have a few left. That's going to have to wait to 2024 because that's when I need to make a little bit more money.
I would tell you something. There's something magical about the whole Michigan-Indiana border that's over there. That's kind of like near South Bend, Indiana. And we could get into this in a little bit, but in a previous life, I was working with a television station out that way. It was in Elkhart, Indiana, actually, which is like the, how do they call it? It's the trailer capital or RV capital of the world, something like that. Like most RVs are made there.
It absolutely is. Yeah. I'm 99% sure my RV, it was manufactured there as well.
Oh,
as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, I think that's the manual I was just reading
We're
located in Elkhart.
So yeah, so I was working with a TV station out there and it, you know, they were on the backside of a massive fire, which was super like bad for them. And they're in a rebuilding phase. So I spent a good week plus out there and was doing a little bit of work with them on their broadcast schedule and software and stuff like that. Anyways, long story short, in my downtime heading into South Bend, Indiana, taking a tour of Notre Dame University was absolutely unbelievable. There's a beautiful little Irish bar in South Bend called Fiddler's Hearth. I highly recommend it. It's a legendary place. And then when you go just a little bit north, you head into Michigan and you can catch the sunsets right over that big old lake right there. And you can see Chicago in the backdrop as the sun is going down. It's so surreal. Totally surreal.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm definitely going to look at that because I am meeting up with a friend to go camping. And when I get done with Michigan and then I'm in Indiana and we're doing camping and a lake cleanup and we're going to try to go over to South Bend. So I will definitely have you message me what you just said.
For sure.
And so I could put that into my trip and make sure that we go there. That'd be so cool. So thank you for that. But yeah, I'm doing an 11-day vacation. I would say half of it's by myself, a little bit. I'm meeting up with some people and I'm really excited about that. And then I have some other vacations coming up here in Florida. Everybody probably knows by now that I live in Florida and I have this like vacation timeshare package. And so I'm going to go work from there and hopefully not work from there really for a week and try to just get some little things done, but just relax, kayak, do things like that.
That's where it's at. Hey, I had a random question for you. This came up in discussion with a few people the other day. It was believed at one point in time that the legend of the HR lady, Wendy Sellers, truly began in the halls of Rollins College. And I was like, hang on a minute. No. Wendy attended, if I'm not mistaken, like 7 different universities and has 12 doctorates or something, right? Like, is Rollins the only university you went to? Or, I mean, talk to me about you a little bit.
No, it is not. It is the last university I went to, though. So I grew up in Northeastern Pennsylvania, the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton area.
So wait a second, Scranton, like the paper mills and like the office and stuff like that, yep. Right?
Absolutely. Which, interesting enough, I never even watched The Office. I'm saving one thing for retirement, and it's going to be that.
You've never watched it?
I've never watched it fully.
Wendy
I've
Sellers.
Watched like an episode here and there. I know.
There's
I know,
so
I know,
many characters in there that when you finally do watch it, you're going to be like, you're going to file a lawsuit against them for stealing portions of your life. I'm telling you right now. I'm telling you right
All
now.
All right. Well, maybe I'll put it on my list for next winter. We don't really get a heck of a lot of winters here in Florida, but when we do, we turn into complete wimps and then we lock ourselves away for a couple weeks. So
Wendy,
I will put that on my list for 2024 and 2025 winter.
I'm going to tell you right now, if you wait till retirement, you're going to be waiting like 25 years. You're so young. You got a long road ahead of you. You got to do it sooner
than later.
I love
you for saying that. And not only that, is who's really going to retire these days, right? But yes, I grew up in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton area. I went to Pittston area, and I went to college in Wilkes-Barre, which is King's College. I went to undergrad school there, and then I also went to graduate school. I got a master's in healthcare administration, and then I got into the healthcare field and decided quickly, nope, do not want to do that.
So wait a second.
And
that was a passion of yours at that time, early in life, was healthcare?
Yeah, you know, I really, and it still is, ironically, in the HR field, I help many employees and employers with their healthcare insurance. I'm an insurance agent by license. I just do it to know, you know, my ABCs, not to sell anything and to scare off some salespeople every once in a while, too.
Wendy, where does that passion come from for healthcare, though?
You know, I think at that time is when it was, you know, it was before we realized how broken healthcare was. And it was like, yay, we're going to fix it. We're going to get these things called, you know, HMOs and all of that thing, all of that stuff. And I'm still passionate about it. Obviously, I deal with it a lot in HR and I got licensed for that, but I'm not passionate about it as a 100% work opportunity. You know what I mean? It's too many details and it's too slow. It is very slow. You get the government involved. Get insurance involved, and it's way too slow. Unfortunately, I didn't realize that until after I got both degrees.
Yeah.
Randomly ended up in HR and then went back to college when I moved to Florida for my second master's degree in healthcare, or I'm sorry, in human resources.
E-break
and
real
quick.
And
that's how I became the HR lady.
All right, e-break real quick here. Randomly fell into HR. What? How does someone randomly fall into HR while you're doing like medical coding or whatever it is that you were doing? Like, how does that happen?
Well, thanks for asking me that. I actually never ended up in the healthcare field. I did a little bit. I was interning. I worked in adult daycare. I worked at a hospital in a marketing department. I was like, oh, maybe this department, maybe that department. And I was like, no, I don't like any of this at all. Understand it, respect it. But I was like, I am going to be a little, I don't know, not bored or held back in this. And no offense to anybody that's doing it. Everybody has their own passion and their own skills. That wasn't my skill set. And so I picked up and moved to Florida. We'll skip over the reasons why for that, but it was just basically throwing a dart on a map, and I moved to Florida and was working, you know, just some odd job, and went for a job interview. And that's when we had paper resumes. And I was in an elevator with my paper resume going up the elevator, and some lady standing next to me looks over and goes, hey, do you know HR? Because I have an HR opening. I'm a recruiter. And I said, I think I could figure it out. And ta-da, that was it. I interviewed with the company and they were like, all right, are you willing to take classes and learn this? And I'm like, well, I used to run a store, and I used to be an assistant manager at CVS. And then I was also a restaurant manager too. So, you know, HR kind of goes in and out of that too, as your operations and management. And I fell into it and just kept learning and learning and learning. And more than that, I listened to the people that were around me. And then I really said, okay, these are the skills that I'm not good at, and I need to go back and get more education.
All right, question for you now. We talk about the mysterious woman in the elevator. Now, I'm not looking for last names. I'm not looking for details. But do you remember her? Do you remember her first name?
I do. I'm not going to say her name or anything.
That's
but
fine.
I actually tried tracking her down recently.
There's where I'm going. I want to know if you stay in touch.
It turns out she's definitely retired. No, we do not stay in touch. I think she moved across the country. She was much older than me. She turns out that she was my soon-to-be new boss. It was his ex-wife. And she said, I have a job opportunity. My ex-husband is looking for an HR person. And I was kind of handed over there. And so it, very, very interesting, small world. Like no matter where you go, it's a small world, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just
immediately think of a professional in the human resources field years later, looking for training, looking for additional resources and coming across the HR lady and probably saying to themselves, oh my God, I hired her back in the day. You know?
Yeah, I don't think she stuck around these parts too long. I do recall, I think she relocated out to West somewhere, Arizona or something like that. But the interesting thing is I'm the one that, I want to help people and I want to prevent people from going in HR if they don't fully know what they're about to get into it. Because at one point in time, HR was like, oh, it's so great. We're going to help people and all of this. And then eventually you learn to hate people. No, I'm just kidding. A little bit. Wink, wink. It's not for everybody. And so I like to have, regardless of the age, I like to have people fully aware of what you're about to get into in human resources in 2024 and beyond. And it is a lot, and it's a lot more than when I got into it. And I don't know if I would have got into it if there was so much, to use a loosey-goosey word, drama. There's so much that has happened since the pandemic in human resources and so much that's happened, period, in HR. And we're responsible for everything from compensation to benefits to reviews and, legalities and ethics and then, training and development, leadership development. I don't know how many other roles that are out there have so many different avenues, but most HR people are covering all of them at the same time. Because most companies are small businesses. So you're lucky if they have one HR person, never mind multiple with different specialties.
So at this point in the story, like you said, made your way to Florida, settled in a little bit, got moving, made that choice of Rollins College. Why Rollins? Of all places.
Honestly, probably because it was local. I mean, they had a degree program for working adults too. So you could still continue going, working. And then you went to college nights and weekends. And it was basically fast tracked. It was very, very fast and furious. And it was a very prestigious school too. Ask me how I know my student loan bills will be there for the rest of my life. So from both colleges, not just from Rollins.
Was it complicated at that point, going back to university, going back to college for this specialty, knowing that you've already achieved and obtained the papers, knowing that you have what it needs to walk in the door and get it, but that personal drive and desire to take it even further, were you frustrated at all by being in classes with people that were probably 20 years younger than you?
It was interesting. It was a wide
range. Not 20 years, by the way. I'm only kidding. Yeah. Come on. Don't take that
one. Yeah, I was much younger at that point in time. It was a wide range of adults, though, So there was people that were just coming right out of college, going to grad school. And then there was people that were, in their 50s going to school. Was it frustrating? I think starting any kind of educational program, even if it's just reading a book, who has time for it? But it's interesting. Once you dive in, you figure out the time. You move your schedule around and you make it happen. At least I did. I'm a very high energy, let's take the world by a storm and we're going to make it happen. If it's on my calendar, I'm doing it. And so, I'm glad I did it. Would I do it now, knowing what I know now about HR? Probably not. And I'm not, by any means saying that our listeners shouldn't have a degree in human resources or a master's degree, but there's so many other opportunities that are out there now, 2024, to learn the skills that you need through certifications, through community college, through just taking courses and not actually getting a full degree. However, many companies require degrees, especially at that time. Moving forward, 2024 and beyond, not as many companies are going to be continuing requiring degrees, in my opinion. Why? Because it's expensive to get degrees, and we're already hurting with attracting and retaining employees. So if we're going to mandate that they have a degree, then you're going to have less candidates.
Yeah, there really wasn't too many internship programs or job shadowing type things back then, or like even trying to bring the high schooler on and train them up to your standards through your own training program. Those things didn't exist. You know, you needed to have 17 years of experience with a doctorate, you know?
Yeah, they existed, but it was just different. The laws were different, too. And it was unpaid internships. And so who could afford to do that? And, you know, it's just a different world right now. I'm thankful for my education. It looks really great on my LinkedIn profile. Ha, ha, ha. But, you know, it is very expensive. And I learned a lot from my peers. And then I was frustrated in some things that I thought I was going to learn more than I did. And so some courses, even though I aced them, I was like, I didn't really learn anything more than I already learned on my own in college, or I mean, at the workplace. So, you know, it was a catch 22, depending on your age and your knowledge base before you go to college. So it's, everybody needs to consider what they want and need on an individual basis and not let anybody tell you what you need to have as a degree or a license.
All right. So here we're finally getting into the potatoes next to the meat. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, here it comes. You ready, Wendy? So is this the point in your timeline that you say, I will become the HR lady? Like, when did that moniker come to be? How did you, of all people, become to be the singular HR lady? That's like a trademark. Talk to me about
this. Yeah, it's actually two trademarks, in fact. I do have two trademarks on the HR lady. And how I became the HR lady was nothing like, you know, oh, this is mind-blowing. I worked for a small company. We didn't have titles. People introduced me as the HR lady. It was a joke. I never really even thought about it until I went out on my own to be an HR consultant, or people would jokingly still start refer to me as the HR lady when I was speaking at conferences or something like that. And then it just stuck. So when I finally went out on my own and started, you know, I had another HR consulting practice before. When I went back to being by myself, I was like, all right, what am I going to name this? And that's when one of my friends said, well, duh, the HR lady. And that same person said, you need to probably get a trademark on that. And I called my friend who's a lawyer, and they handled it for me. And then as I wrote my books, my first book, Suck It Up Buttercup, Be a Leader People Will Follow, that's when I decided to get the second trademark so that it was on a book title. And now, you know, that I'm protected from other people using that moniker.
All right, what year are we talking that the HR lady came to be? And what year did Suck It Up Buttercup get written?
Suck It Up Buttercup was published in 2018. So I think I got my first trademark around the same time, 2018, 2019, and then the next one the following year. I have been, as of, it's 2024 right now, I have been an HR consultant for about 12 years. And in between there have been known as the HR lady, even if it was not official at that point in time.
That's so cool. So cool. And Suck It Up Buttercup. This was a life experience. This was, tell us a little bit about Suck It Up Buttercup, but then if you could expand a little bit more into, like, why'd you write it? What's it about and why'd you write it?
So Suck It Up Buttercup apparently was a saying I said to people, and I didn't realize it. I just must have said it jokingly, you know, hey, Suck It Up Buttercup, you might be part of the problem. And that's what the book's about. And someone at a networking event, a community networking event, I think I was speaking at that event, came up to me with a sign that said, Suck It Up Buttercup. And I was like, what's this? They're like, I saw this in a shop and thought about you because you always say that. I was like, oh boy, I'm a little embarrassed. They're like, no, it's fun. It's funny. And then when I was writing a book, because somebody told me, hey, you have a lot to offer. You need to write a book. And I was like, I don't want to write a book. They're like, you're writing a book. And I was like, okay, I'll do what I'm told. Yeah. And I wrote the book and then named it Suck It Up Buttercup, Be a Leader, People Will Follow. I wrote the book, Suck It Up Buttercup, for anyone really, but I really want people who might be part of the problem to read it going, yeah, suck it up, buttercup, suck it up, employee. And then grab the book and read it and go, oh, as a manager, as a business owner, I might actually be part of the problem here, not them. And so it's, you know, because guess what? Wendy Sellers was part of the problem.
Were you?
Absolutely.
Hang on. Not only how were you part of the problem, but how did you come to realize that you were part of the problem?
So I came to realize that I was part of the problem, not because my employees were crying or upset. No, suck it up. You're the problem. You're weak. You know, grow a thick skin. When I took a DISC personality styles class, so DISC personality styles is derivative of Myers-Briggs. It's something that I'm now certified in. And I took a course. It was like a half day course. And we had to do an assessment ahead of the course. And then we got delivered the results in the course. And I was shocker, identified as a high D, dominant and direct personality style. And it turns out that dominant and direct personality styles, yay, we take things and run with them and run over people and their feelings. And that's when I realized, ooh, I'm part of the problem here. My personality style is the reason people aren't really listening to me or wanting to communicate with me or avoiding me, because I'm thinking everybody wants to communicate the way I want to be communicated with. And I quickly realize, whoa, most other people would not like that. They don't want direct, in your face, no sugar coating. You know, they want, hey, I'm a human. Talk to me. Slow down. Talk to me about my weekends, my feelings, my family. Give me details, where high Ds do not want details. We just want a summary and go forward. So it was such a huge aha moment that I signed up for the entire course to get certified as a DISC personality style assessment trainer. I didn't really do anything with it for a long time, except for continue to educate myself and the team. I was in corporate at the time. And then when I came out on my own, HR consultant is when I said, you know what, I could really use this to help people. And in fact, my neighbors both just graduated from college, and I gifted them with a DISC assessment. I'm like, I know you both have jobs. You already got hired. I'm like, but you're going to be in the nursing industry. Yeah. You're going to be dealing with people all the time, doctors, nurses, medical professionals, but customers, clients, patients, their family. Like, trust me, it's going to go a long way for you to know about your personality style, and that you have to adjust yours so that other people can hear what you're saying. You communicate by adjusting to their personality style, not ramming yours down their throat.
So Wendy, you literally gave them a DISC in a box.
A DISC in a box. Absolutely.
Nice.
Dun, dun. You're so funny. But yeah, that's kind of how I really realized about the, you know, suck it up, buttercup, that I needed to suck it up and I needed to say, slow down, start planning things out. Not everybody can wing it. You shouldn't be winging it either. You should get to know people so that you can change the conversation so that their personality is comfortable with the conversation. And then honestly, so you can get them to do what you want them to do. If you could talk to them in a manner that they understand and appreciate, and they still see that you respect them, then they're going to do what you want them to do together.
89 conferences you've spoken at, 549 published podcast shows and counting, 983 projects completed, 291 HR advisor clients. The numbers go on. The numbers don't lie. There's power in these numbers, and they're only growing every single day. When we think about the millions of books you've sold, the countless speaking engagements at the same time, I think it's fascinating that you sometimes give away the books at your speaking engagements, and also people line up to have them autographed. You don't always give them away. I know that. But a couple lucky people might walk away with one. Let me ask you, when you're out there speaking, you take the books with you?
I try to, especially if I'm local or I'm able to shove them in my suitcase. A lot of times, depending on the size of the event, if it's a private conference, like I was just speaking at a private conference in Texas, and it was just for the employees of that college. And it was very specific situations that we are dealing with. And, you know, I'll send the books ahead of time.
That's
so, you know, either send them right from my printer or actually send them myself from UPS. Otherwise, again, it just depends on the conference itself. I always have a few tucked in my backpack so that I can hand them out. I handed some out the other day. I was speaking at another conference. Geez, I don't remember where I was, Wisconsin. And somebody sat next to me at breakfast and it was actually a vendor like, oh, you're the HR lady. And I was like, you know, I'm not a very shy person. And I was like, I turned a little red. My friend is obsessed with you. And I said, well, here, I have two books. I'll sign them and give them to you if you take pictures of me for the conference, because I'm usually traveling by myself and I don't have anybody to take pictures.
Oh, trust me. I feel you there.
But yeah, my books are now available on audio. And they are also available in print in English and Spanish as well.
That's fantastic. Let me know when you have it available in Farsi. I've got a couple of people interested. But
I'll put that on my to-do list.
Appreciate you. Being a conference speaker, though, what are we talking about when you're hitting the road? Is it always the same thing? Are you hitting the circuit like, okay, this year I'm going to do this speech, next year I'll do another? Talk to me.
Yeah, it really depends on what they're looking for and you know, who the attendees are. Lately, in the past couple of years, especially since the pandemic, it's really been based on, in one version or another, how to attract and retain employees. Yeah. And, you know, that's a pretty vague title. And so it really depends on more. Do we want to do surveys? Do we want to do compensation studies? You know, are we changing our recruiting process? Are we changing our review process? Are we training our managers? I do a lot of private training with managers. So they can be managers from an industry and they're all coming to a conference, or they could just be, you know, people in general from all walks of life, and they want to know a very specific item. The biggest thing, you know, besides the attracting and retaining employees, is how to give feedback. People are so confused, and it is also scared on how do I give feedback, A, without insulting my employee, and B, without crossing the line, either the legal line or the moral line. So yeah. I have a list on my website, thehrlady.com. You can just click on training, and I have an entire list of a lot of the topics I have done in the past. And of course, everything's customizable as well. But ironically, you know, a lot of the conferences that I speak at, they're not HR people. It's people that don't have HR. Think about it, JC. Most businesses in the United States are small businesses that don't even have an HR department.
Yeah.
And so they're owners, their business ops team, their managers, their directors, their supervisors, they're saying, teach me how to be HR, because we don't have HR. We'll never be HR. So I love doing that. I love teaching people. I don't care what background they have. If they have a no degree, they have 5 years experience, 2 minutes of experience of managing people.
Sure.
I love teaching them that, hey, everybody can do this. We just have to realize as a company, we're all in this together. And as a community, we're all in this together. So we should be helping each other out when we come up with a problem. Maybe, you know, this employee over here in this department is really passionate about interviews. Let them be the expert and let them help you lead the interview process. This employee over here in this department is really good at, you know, I don't know, rewards and giving recognition. Well, let them lead the committee to help the company figure that out.
It is truly customized, interactive. It's pretty wild. I'm looking at your website. I'm going over things and I am blown away by the fact that you're someone that puts their rates on their sleeve. It's not something you see every day. I can literally click the tab that says rates. And for HR consulting and recruiting services, we're talking virtual HR advice and consulting, guidance for committee-driven initiatives, helps with policies, processes, compensation studies, assistance and guidance with recruiting initiatives, access to resources for attention, and more, all this HR stuff. And you have an hourly rate available if anyone wants to book you at any time. So here's the million-dollar question. If I am that small business in Topeka, and I'm listening to this, and I see this, I go there, I check that out, I see the rate, I could just book you right now. Or are you going to turn work away? Are you at the point where you turn people away?
It's interesting. It's hard to turn people away, but I just did it this morning, actually.
Why?
Somebody emailed me.
Why is it hard? Why is it hard?
Well, you know, as a entrepreneur, I'm a one-person company. I do have vendors and consultants that help me, but generally I'm a one person company. So you're always like just afraid, like, oh, if I turn that away, how am I going to pay my bills? But in the end, what I've really realized is if I can't 100% commit to that project, especially with HR consulting, which might be 2 minutes or 20 hours. And it's usually they're not calling you that they're saying, oh yeah, I need this in 3 months. It's usually like, I need it right now.
Right.
Well, then I have to drop the
ball.
We're
going to court Wednesday. Help me.
Yeah, exactly. Like I help. I'm having an issue right now. And so I just don't want to give somebody, you know, partial answers, and I don't want to hurt my current clients, and I don't want to, you know, take on work that I can't fully commit. So am I at the point where I'm turning out away work? Yeah, sort of. I've been there for the past few years. With that said, though, JC, it's also because post-pandemic, I have been doing a lot more management training, custom management training, online management training, as well as conference speaking. And so that's very time consuming. And so, you know, something's got to give. And what has given is less HR consulting, more management training. I do have many clients that I have HR consulting with, but now I keep the clients who actually listen to me. So if they're paying me to give them advice and feedback and they choose not to listen to me, that's their prerogative, but I'm probably not going to continue working with them, because what's going to happen is I'm going to get blamed for the problem and they're going to come back later. I'm going to have to redo all the work, and I'm just not in it for the money. I am. I have bills to pay. Remember those student loans?
Right.
So I am in it for the money too, but I'm also in it for somebody to say, the HR lady helped me, and for the employee to say, things have changed. Thank you so much. I'm staying here now and I'm referring my friend. That's what I want.
SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, HRCI, the Human Resource Certification Institute. There's so many other certifying organizations out there, and a lot of them hold their own conferences or participate in massive conferences. I think one of them had Beyonce or Billy Joel play. I can't remember. Anyways, long story short, why aren't they knocking down your door? Why aren't you speaking at the SHRM National Conference? Do HR people hate you?
Probably. I don't know. Ask them, not me. I'm not really offended if somebody doesn't like me. Listen, I'm not the cup of tea for everybody. And I'm usually pretty honest about that. Like I said, I'm very direct.
Look, here's where touchy. I'm going. I'm going to make it easier for you. Here's exactly where I'm going. Does your style of not just putting your rates on the table, but your demeanor, the way that you entrench yourself and immerse yourself into a small business or any business, really, when you're helping them, does that ruffle the feathers of the industry that most people just don't trust? You've positioned yourself to be trustworthy. A lot of people don't trust HR.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and they have good reason not to, right? HR is supposed to be, generally speaking, 50-50 for the employee, for the company. But let's face it, because the company pays them, they usually say, I'm going to side with the company and, you know, push away the employee's concerns. Fortunately, what I would like to say is a lot of HR people have changed, especially since the pandemic. And they're saying, no, company, we're not going to side with you. And I'm one of those. I say, you either make the change or I won't work with you. Sure, there's the fear that you're not going to be able to get paid anymore, but don't pay me then. I don't care. I'm not going to work with a company that treats people negatively. Regarding the conferences and things like that, I'll speak at conferences as long as they pay me.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, a lot of the SHRM conferences and things like that. I've spoken at them past a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I just don't have the bandwidth to be giving out, to be driving there, spending a few days, and then, you know, not get paid for it. Because that means I'm not going to be able to help private companies while I'm giving free advice elsewhere. With that said, I occasionally still do freebies for people that, you know, ask me to, but I usually do it from right where I'm sitting right now, virtually, being Zoom or GoToWebinar or something like that.
There's a massive difference, though, between doing a conference for your peers, quote unquote peers, people in the industry, versus doing a conference for leaders and decision makers in industry. Big difference.
Yeah, there absolutely
big
is.
Big difference.
And you know, I'm not I can educate HR people, but I just feel that there's so many of us educators that are not educating the managers, you know? So if you're educating an HR person, now that HR person has to go back and educate all of their managers on what I just said. Why don't we just cut the middleman out and go straight to the management team and train them?
That makes sense.
The cool thing is though, and the great thing is, you know, I keep saying about the pandemic, but the pandemic has changed the way we live in the world, that we do a lot of things virtual, like you and I are doing right now. And there's so much management training, live or recorded, that we can do via go to webinars, Zoom, whatever there is. I speak for a lot of, or I should say I train for a lot of education companies online, if they fit the moral bill and the ethics bill that I'm looking for. And then, you know, I also have some courses of my own that are on my program, my own learning management system, that are very specific, but Wendy style of, hey, you're a one man management team, you have 20 employees, you're the only manager there, you're not going to be able to afford to go to a $5,000 conference, but maybe you can go online and get this course for, you know, anywhere from $50 to $500, depending on where you're looking online. So I just want to change the world one step at a time, but I prefer to do most of it virtually. Because we can't, it's accepted. First of all, you could be interactive, and I could help a lot of people in a short period of time and not have to be driving all over the place. But I am also doing that as well. So,
yeah, but you really are optimizing company culture with every speak, though. I mean, no, you're certainly more than welcome. But I mean, we're really talking about not just inclusivity or respect at work. We could be talking about legal compliance. We could be talking about
one of the most boring topics there is, but it's necessary, right?
It's necessary, you know? Yeah.
Like, you need to know, hey, you're about to interview somebody, you never interviewed somebody before. By the way, there's laws, and here's a list of things that you cannot say, which, by the way, for our listeners, I have a bunch of freebies, including a list of interview questions you cannot ask by law on my website. You can just go to the download section and put in your name and email, and you will get all the freebies. It's in a Google Drive. So anything in there, you could take it and use. You have my permission.
Leaders have been going at things their own from the time they started their company, or the time that they walked through the door and did their own thing, and now they cleaned house and they want to start clean, right? And sometimes they can't necessarily trust the people that are within their tightest of circles. There's value in moving forward with talking with someone like yourself. There really is, especially if you're looking to create a vision, if you're looking to impart a brand new mission or instill values within an organization, and you're either reshaping it or crafting that new look for the future, you help with all those things in a way, don't you?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And in fact, my books, my second book, which we will not say the title on this podcast, it's about dealing with jerks at work. We'll just leave it at that. But I do have an outline steps of how to come either create or dust off your company values. And then I really say, put those company values into your job descriptions, put them into your job interview questions, put them into your employee review and feedback processes, so that you can make sure that all your employees are not only doing the technical work they should be doing, but also they're behaving the way you want them to behave. Today's workers will not work with jerks. That's basically what it comes down to. And so if you have jerks in the workplace, you need to fix them or get rid of them. Otherwise, you're going to continue having turnover issues. And that's not fun. Nobody wants that. We have enough, you know, pandemic and all these other issues to deal with. We don't need to be dealing. Let's control what we can control, right? And so values are something that we can definitely control.
Oh my gosh, especially when those jerks might be the people that are your customers, right? And you know that you're going to have to deal with them no matter what if you want to stay in business. So why not be kind to each other while you're all dealing with the jerks?
Yeah, be kind to each other. But then, you know, we could talk about dealing with the customers on maybe one of our podcasts as well. So, you know, I just love to improve workplace outcomes and employee experiences. You know, education, preparation, and consistency, it's vital. And that's really what I always drive home in all of my trainings, all of my consulting, you name it. You know, I feel like I'm on record and repeat, but consistency is important.
All right. I got one more I got to hit you with this because it did become a little legendary viral type trend. And some people were talking about it recently that I was conversing with. But allegedly, you have some advice that's floating around on the internets. Internets. It was invented by Al Gore, renamed by George Bush, the internets. So, like, you actually give advice about body odor. Is that right? What's that all about? Come on.
That I have at one point in time.
Body odor at work, right? This is a YouTube sensation.
There is. You know what? As HR, the oddest, craziest, weirdest, most unique things come walking through your door when managers come to you and say, my team is complaining about one of my employees' body odor. What do I do? And so you could find the YouTube video on that I have given advice. You know, my basic advice for anything, whether somebody's, you know, has dirty clothes, dirty hair, body odor, whatever it might be, is be kind, be empathetic, but also be direct and to the point that says this is affecting the workplace. Is it illegal? It might be, actually. It might be a disability. And so you do have to be careful.
Good point.
So when other people give advice to say, like, just tell them you smell and people don't want to work with you, hold on there a second. Yeah. They may have a legit disability and now you have to handle it a different way. And so, you know, these are all some very unique situations that I have been in as an HR director. And that at one point, I remember this specific conversation came up. Me and my boss at that time said, okay, we have two situations that we have to handle this week. One is somebody has body odor. The other one, somebody is getting let go. And I said, I'll take the let go one. And he was like, no way, I'm not taking that one. And so, you know, it's hard. It's very hard, but we're all in this together. We have podcasts, we have YouTube, we have Instagram, we have LinkedIn. Follow somebody that you like, whether it's me or somebody else, and get the advice for free so you don't have to pay for it. So thank you so much for asking me all those questions. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's the least I do.
You're so funny. Hey, I want to switch the gears here and, you know, get to know you. And so our listeners,
yes.
And I have questions for you.
Oh, no.
First of all, number one, we only introduce you on our show, on our shows. By the way, we have two shows. This is the HR Lady podcast, but we also have HR Empowerment. So you could check out that podcast as well. They're two, both different formats, but we're the co-hosts of both of them. So on both of them, we just say the HR Lady and JC.
That's
right. JC, do you have a last name?
I do.
Why don't you use it?
Oh, not a problem. Yeah. My closest friends have always just called me JC. And interestingly, my dad, who was in the business years ago as well, he went by JC. And my grandpa, years and years and years ago, he went by JC. And his dad went by JC. So it's just kind of like a thing that's been passed down through the generations. And now it's my turn to carry the torch for a little while. So yeah, those closest to me just call me JC. And it keeps it simple, you know?
All right, but how could people find you online if they don't know your last name?
Absolutely. That last name's Connors. So stop by jimconnors.net. You could check out Interesting Things with JC. I do a daily podcast, which I'm actually considering pausing and creating a season. And my season might be 1,000 episodes. Take a break and do another 1,000 later. I don't know. I'm on the fence right now. But yeah, but stop by jimconnors.net if you want to check that out or learn a little bit more about me. But yeah,
tell me about Interesting Things with JC. I mean, I know because I do think they're interesting. I listen to your podcast and they're very short, 3 to 5 minutes. And I'm just like, I didn't know that. And then I go look it up. I'm like, okay, he's not lying. How did I not know that? And then some of them I'm just cracking up laughing. So how did that start? How did Interesting Things with JC start?
Yeah, it's actually fascinating. So I just recorded episode 1000. And that's going to be coming out in the next week or so. And as you said, you know, they're anywhere from 2 to 8 minutes in duration. And I started at episode 100. I didn't start at 000 with a pilot. There is a whole a whole string of them from episode 1 to episode 100 that haven't been released yet. And I'm actually toying with the idea about releasing those momentarily. They're shorts. And the entire intention with creating this, when I think back to when I used to listen to radio as a kid, okay, there was a guy by the name of Paul Harvey who had the rest of the story. And I would also listen to my own father on the radio and Casey Kasem and all these other guys, Wolfman Jack and people in between. And I liked the way that people told stories in different ways, all the way down to John Tesh as well, you know. So I was like, okay, let me take an opportunity to try to recreate that magic, but in my own light. We're going to try to focus on some positive stories and tell good stories for the world to hear, because we were at a time in this country, in the political climate, online, everything. It was just getting crazy. And so many people, there was so much venom and hatred going around and all this stuff. So I says, you know, let me give this a shot, you know. So I found a few feel-good stories, and I quickly learned there's not a lot of them. So I just started going with interesting facts and interesting things. And as I kept assembling this, it was pretty clear that this was going to be a thing, interesting things with JC, to then differentiate from other shows that were out there that actually kind of suck in a way because people don't tell stories good enough. And all this was on the heels of a complete and utter meltdown of another podcast that I used to help co-host in a way. And my co-host on that one at the time, we hit some creative differences. You know, we were going to find a vendor and get paid, and he found one and he got paid and kind of left me in the dark. So I just started this off on the side. And then lo and behold, you know, life changes and things change. And I'm still good with that guy, and I'm good with everybody along the way, but I had to start my own thing. I was empowered by a dear friend of mine by the name of Rob. He said, you know, you don't have to be a supporting character. You're good enough to break out and do it on your own. I'm like, I know that. I just kind of really don't want to. He's like, well, find your niche, work on it. I'd listen to it every day if you had one. So that stuck in the back of my head, and I was like, you know what, let me give this a shot. So I started, I put together the first few episodes of the series, and then I started, I got all my technical stuff in line. I had my relief path. See, I used to be a broadcaster, okay? So I'm familiar with the fact that even if you create something, you need to have a relief path. You need to have a commitment to broadcast to then carry forward. So I needed to make sure that this podcast wasn't just being flung into the ether, but I wanted to make sure that it was on every single platform available out there. And I got that done. I achieved that. And then once I checked that box, I started sending out the requests to specific networks. And there was a gentleman, the CEO of the podcast radio network out of London, England, who responded to one of my submissions and my message. And he was like, look, I love it, man. I'd love to feature you on the network and kick this up and get it going. He was still kind of an upstart at the time. They've been around a while. They were established. But here's the interesting thing. It's not just a podcast that you could download and listen to. It's also available on social media. But being on the podcast radio network then also garnered me common carriage. So if you're walking the streets of London and listening to the radio, you might actually be able to listen to interesting things with JC. And what springboarded from that was Podcast Radio USA, which just started to launch over the past year. And Podcast Radio US, rather, is their moniker. You could stop by podcastradiousus.com. And they've got very interesting coverage in the Carolinas, in Detroit, Southwest Florida, and Tampa Bay. Stream Podcast Radio in Tampa anytime you want to, as well as some common carriage there as well. I don't know the exact stations, but things are slowly being picked up over time. So they have a continuous feed, and they play a podcast followed by a podcast. You know, it could be an interview like the Falling Writers podcast, followed by a history podcast called Notorious Women. But in between the two, they'll fill time using interesting things with JC. Interstitial. So that's kind of where it all was born from, leveraging a little bit of my personal story and motivation, as well as, you know, factoring things I needed when I was in broadcasting to build a schedule to round out the time frames, and then also getting that commitment to broadcast from great people and them rolling the dice on me. I got a call last year to go speak at a podcaster convention in New York City. I just couldn't pull it off in time. It was a tight time frame. I was going to head up on stage with the CEO of Podcast Radio. And which, by the way, if they call me tomorrow and say, look, we're doing it again this year, JC, come on down, I'd be there in a heartbeat. Trust me, I really would. Great people. Love to get together with them in person one of these times, have a cocktail or two, and just talk. But anyways, long story short, yeah, interesting things with JC. There it is.
Well, I love it. And please don't stop it, even if you just do it in seasons. It really is entertaining and informational. Like I said, there's so many times I follow you on Instagram, and then that reminds me, okay, turn on your podcast. And so while I'm watching or working, I'm usually listening to like an hour or two's worth of your podcast because they're so quick. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know that information. So please don't stop, even if it's just in seasons. Hey, switching gears here. I wanted to ask an interesting story for you
before we switch gears, though. You might enjoy this. Okay. So out of all the episodes of all the podcasts I've ever done, okay, and I've now recorded probably nearing 2,000 in total amongst many different shows and series. And two of those series that I used to co-host with a couple gentlemen, the one guy's name was Lenny Alba. He passed away, unfortunately. And then I carried the torch in a podcast with a gentleman by the name of Ramir Green, who also then passed away. And then I co-hosted with someone else, and then myself, and then now you. So in totality, thinking about all these different shows, the vast variety of people in interviews, from 3 to 4 hour long podcasts to 30-second podcasts, it's been quite the adventure.
And quite the ride.
And out of all that, there is one episode, Wendy Sellers, the HR lady, that is more popular than any other episode ever. Do you know what the topic?
What's that?
Okay, here it is. There was a trend going around online not too long ago where the youth coming up on social media believed that if an excavator rotated counterclockwise 16 times, it would unscrew itself. You could go 15, but on the 16th time, it would unscrew itself and pop off. So I actually did a interesting things with JC, focused on can an excavator unscrew itself. And that episode, just on social media, just on TikTok alone, has just shy of 1 million listens. Just on TikTok.
Whoa.
When you add in Instagram, Facebook, and all the other social media platforms, Twitter, and all the others that are out there, it's already over 1 million. And then when I look at the podcast numbers on the website as well, my total numbers, and YouTube as well, when I tally the entire thing together, that one episode has got me near 2 million views, 2 million listens and downloads. And this is royalty free. This is free to the public. And I look at that 2 mil and I'm like, wow, I could have monetized that. And then I'm like, you know what? There's one way that we could monetize that, and that is if you enjoy the show, if you like what I'm bringing to the table, if you enjoy the voice, and some people think that I'm an AI, I understand that. I'm not. I'm a real person with emotions. All you have to do is reach out, book me. I'd be more than happy to either come MC your conference or follow you into Starbucks and place your order for you. I don't know. It's up to you, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I have a follow-up question before I jump into what I was going to talk about. So does it unscrew itself?
No.
I didn't think so.
No. And a lot of people were upset that I made a 3-minute podcast about it, explaining how it works. And there was this one young gentleman, I can definitely say that because he's in his 20s. He used expletives and said that I took too long to explain it. In reality, I gave the answer in the first 30 seconds, and then I explained, too much for you, Junior. Go ahead, tune out. So I offered the gentleman an opportunity. I said, look, I'm always looking to improve myself to write these podcasts better. Why don't you throw a topic out there, write me a script, and I'll record it for you? Well, he never replied. So then I just very simply Googled his name, found a press release of when he went into college football, stating he could play any football position. And then I created a podcast about how offensive linemen who could play any position are extremely rare. And then I listed off all the Hall of Famers in the NFL that could do it. I tagged the young gentleman in hopes that we could make amends, but he blocked me on social media. But I did give him credit for inspiring that podcast. Yes.
That is funny. Okay, I want to switch gears here to the first time we met. I honestly don't remember the year. What was the year?
Well, put it on me like that right quick. Hang on a second. Let's see.
All right, well, we could say, I don't know, 6 years ago. I really don't know. But the first time we met, we were both going to a conference, so to speak. It was an after hours networking event type, you know, speaking thing. And you jumped in to help as the MC because things were going wrong. You weren't scheduled to be the MC.
Aha.
You just said
2018,
hey.
October of 2018.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah. October 21st, 2018, 5 years ago. And you gave a speak about not being a bleep, bleep leader. Don't be a bad leader.
Oh, the funny thing is, I don't even remember being a speaker there. I thought I was just an attendee there. So I know where it was physically in the Orlando area.
Maybe it was 2017 then. Did you speak the year after I did it? I can't recall.
No, that sounds about right. Because my first book, Suck It Up Buttercup, came out in 2018. And then my second book about not being a bleep, bleep leader came out the next year. And so that sounds about right.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. Anyway. Why did you walk into this conference or this educational session and say, hey, apparently you need help. Let me grab the microphone and take control and be the MC.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I was in the area. I was in the area doing some recording. I was working on the podcast that I had going at the time. It was actually a show I had you on at one point in the early days as well. And while I was down there working on getting some things together, this event was going to be taking place, to which I was going to be stopping by anyways, just to check it out, to kind of catch what the craze was. And it fell in line with the podcast that we were doing at the time. And we had an agreement to record a podcast live on the floor of the facility where this Disrupt HR event was taking place. So that was already in the works. So it was part of the gig of being down there. And then word came out that there was a change in who was available to MC, and they were going to need someone last minute. And I said, well, hey, I'm already going to be there. I'm going to be recording the podcast in the pre-show hours. I'd be happy to do it for you if you want. One time only. Now, my style's a little bit different, okay? I'm not the guy that's going to get up there and do magic tricks or tell the cheesy jokes. I might slip one in here or there, I mean, for fun. But if you've ever seen what I do, I'm driving this event. I'm moving this from one thing to the next. And the whole goal is to try to get it done smooth, quick, efficient, spotlight the people that are coming up next, and keep moving forward. It's not about me. It's about them. Some people don't like that. Hey, you need to be up there and do a magic trick or do a this or fly or I don't know. Do something crazy. I'm not that guy. But I'm going to make you sound better than you ever got introduced before, let me tell you.
Every time I've been at any event that you've been an MC, I absolutely love it. You keep it moving. You're passionate about what's going on, but you're like, this is what's happening. Let's keep it on schedule. And let's face it, most people that are at conferences, whether the conference is 2 hours or, you know, 4 days, they have things to do. They're there for a reason.
Yeah.
They don't want to be in a session that was supposed to be 40 minutes and now they're there 65 minutes because
exactly.
Somebody was chit-chatting. The MC, the introducer, was chit-chatting about whatever, the weather, when you're there to hear about this very specific situation. So, you know, it is hard as an MC to get up there and keep the energy high, provide solutions, not stress, and be able to figure out, okay, something's going wrong and I need to fix it. And you did that for me at my Disrupt HR event as well. I owned Disrupt HR Gainesville for a little bit before the pandemic. And my first one, you came as a guest and I was freaking out. Technology issues everywhere. And you're like, move, I got this. We're taking a break. And I'm like, oh my God. Fortunately, it was at a brewery, so I could go run and get a beer, calm down, and be like, okay, we got this. Nobody even noticed. So thank you so much for saving the day.
Yeah, I wasn't your guest that I was your guest,
oh, yes,
but I was
you
your
were
MC
at that
one. Yeah.
You yeah. were, but I was still trying to be Wendy in oh, yeah. charge. Yeah. And you basically said, move. I got this. And I was like, okay. In case anybody's never met me, one of our mutual friends actually just said it to somebody 2 days ago. Somebody needed help with a personal situation. And they turned and said, get Wendy. She's bossy. She'll take care of it. And I said, put it on my calendar. Let's put it on my calendar right now. I'll pre-plan with you. But sometimes my bossiness gets in the way. In that case, it did, because I was trying to take your job over. So thank you so much for saving the day.
No worries there. I got a funny story on that one, too. You had introduced me to the team over at Space Coast. Now, that's a portion of Florida. It's comprised of two Sherm chapters, and they come together to have the Space Coast HR conference every year. And you said, hey, try this guy. I heard him in Orlando. He seems pretty cool. Let's give it a shot. It was because of you. I got my foot in the door over there, and I went down there, and you came out as well and rocked it out. It was a fantastic event. Now, I don't remember if it was the first time or second time. It may have been the second time down, but there was the back-to-back year. And in the back-to-back year, it was year two, if I'm not mistaken. So it was out to Space Coast, do the event, get in the car. And I had the podcast, which we would record and talk with people on the floor in between, you know, on free time. And then I would MC the event. So we took that show on the road and drove from Melbourne, Florida, all the way to Gainesville, Florida, and set up and got ready to roll in less than 24 hours. I'm saying another conference. And there we were for Disrupt HR Gainesville 1.0. And exactly as you described, it literally happened, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you. So I told this story. I had a job interview a few years ago, Wendy, and it was for a public relations thing where you would be up speaking in front of people and running sessions and doing all this jazz. And they said, tell me about the time you had adversity and what you did to overcome it. And I explained how we were down at the coast and did everything in Melbourne and packed up and drove to Gainesville, set up and had the technical difficulties and the support I provided, the connection that we had and coming up with alternative solutions on the fly and yada, yada, yada. And the whole depth of the entire scenario, to which, ladies and gentlemen, we are not doing it justice. There's a lot more that goes into it, technical difficulties and trying to provide Wendy with solutions on the fly so that we could overcome that and keep the thing rolling. Everyone in the audience had no idea that there were problems. We made it seamless and smooth, and that's what I do. And I explained that in the job interview, and I'll never forget the gentleman after the interview. He gave me feedback, and he said, you know, that story you told about going between two conferences and speaking in front of everyone and having those problems, you don't have to lie. And Wendy Sellers, the HR lady, was a reference on my resume at the time, and he didn't even call her, but he had the audacity to say that. I bring that up to say this, ladies and gentlemen. Whatever your story is, wherever life has taken you, it's not wrong. You're not wrong, because it's your journey. If there's people out there that want to discredit it, if there's people out there that think differently of it, quote, let them. End quote. Just go ahead and let them.
Right.
But you ain't got to deal with them. And when they show their true colors that way, you never got to look them the same way again. Respect is a two-way street. And just never forget that. Respect is a two-way street. But yeah, Wendy, it's been a wild ride so far. We are nearing 1 hour, 6 minutes into our chat today. It's been quite the wild ride so far.
So I want to ask or just mention one more thing. First of all, for our listeners, if you love JC's radio voice like I do, again, he is an MC for hire, a very experienced event MC. Reach out by visiting jimconnors.net. And then the last thing I wanted to say is, you know, I have volunteered a lot. I've been on a lot of boards, nonprofit boards. My passions are resolving homelessness, especially with those that are focused on veterans. And I wanted to thank you, JC, for serving as a veteran in our military. So thank you very much. And if there's anything you wanted to say about your military experience, please do so in less than 1 minute.
Improvise, adapt, and overcome. Semper Fi, Ura. I'll leave it at that. And I've got one final question for you, Wendy Sellers, because I'm going to reposition my time for this question. Do you know why the tomato turned red?
I do not.
Because it saw Wendy's salad dressing. Back to you.
Oh, boy, that was cheesy.
I know.
With that said, I love cheese, so thank you very much. Hey, this was great. Very much appreciate your time today, and I hope everybody got to learn a little bit more about myself and about JC. And if you have any specific topics that you want us to talk about in the future on the HR Lady podcast or on HR Empowerment podcast, please just drop us a line, either one of us on our podcast, on LinkedIn, anywhere you could find us, and we'd be more than happy to check it out. And we're also looking for guests, so please connect with us. Take care, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and stay safe.
That's right. Drive safe. Have a good night.